Chapter 8, The Hearts of Being Polysecure. Now that we've covered being a safe haven and secure base, the two broader strokes of being polysecure, I want to focus on some more specific things you can do to cultivate being polysecure in your multiple relationships. I've combed through the literature on the conditions needed to create secure attachment in adult romantic relationships and considered what I've experienced and witnessed in the polyamory partnerships that I've counseled. The result is the acronym HEARTS, which I use to encapsulate the different ingredients, skills, capacities, and ways of being required for secure functioning in multiple attachment-based relationships. So the acronym stands for H is being here, which is being here and present with me. E, express delight. A, attunement. R, rituals and routines. T, turning towards after conflict. S, secure attachment with self. The first five letter in HEARTS, the heart in HEARTS, cover the relational level of being polysecure. When explaining these, I suggest different behaviors and practices that you can experiment with and take on in your attachment-based polyamorous relationships. The S in HEARTS focuses on the individual level of being polysecure. I have dedicated the whole next chapter to this, where I will guide you through suggestions and practices for applying HEART to yourself. An important caveat is that you do not need to be perfect in all of these things all of the time. But my hope is that if you prioritize these things at the heart of your relationships, you will discover beautiful and powerful ways to thrive in love. So now I'll go through the different letters. H, are you here? From an infant's perspective, it would be impossible to attach and bond to someone who is not there. The absence of caregivers can be dangerous and damaging and can have a ripple effect for years to come. Attachment begins in the body, first in utero and then through skin-to-skin contact with our caregivers. Physical proximity is needed for the development of attachment, since it is through touch and face-to-face contact that we forge bonds with each other. And it is by responding to a child's cries with our own bodies that we inform them that they are safe and not alone. Voice also plays an important role in the attachment system. The right tone and cadence from our attachment figures can have the powerful ability to soothe us when distressed, and a person's voice and body language can also alert us to how trusting and safe they are. Optimal functioning of the attachment system and the formation of attachment security are best facilitated by consistent interactions with significant others who are responsive to our needs for proximity. We need to know that our attachment figures are available to us, that they are within arm's reach, literally and virtually, and that they will be available and responsive when we call for them. When we experience our partners as being here with us, it results in the positive beliefs that our partners care about us, we matter to them, and we are worthy of their love and attention. Conversely, when our partners are unavailable, unresponsive, or mentally elsewhere, attachment insecurity can arise, feeding the fears and doubts that we are not valued, loved, or worthy. The Buddhist monk and peace activist Thich Nhat Hanh is widely attributed as providing the quote, quote, "the most precious gift we can offer is our presence," unquote. But entrepreneur Malcolm Forbes is said to have reminded us that, quote, "presence is more than just being there," unquote. Being in the same physical space does not necessarily mean that you are here and present with the people you are near. When you are with your partners, are you really focusing on them and giving your full attention, or are you distracted by your phone, by the stresses from the day, by your worries about the future, or by your other partners? Are you really listening to your partners when they talk? Or are you thinking about other things, only partially listening or mentally preparing for what you want to say next? Physical proximity is extremely important and necessary for attachment, but it is not sufficient if the quality of presence is poor. Being present with your partner is important for people in any relationship structure, but struggling with presence and availability is a common complaint in non-monogamous relationships, since there are typically more people to attend to in any given day or week. One of the most common complaints that I hear is of partners who are spending quality time together and one of the partners is messaging with different partners in ways that feel distracting and interruptive. Sometimes, of course, messaging is fine, but in this case, I'm talking about ways that feel disconnected or interruptive to the quality time with the people you're actually in proximity with. Attachment is an embodied experience, and it is first through being present with ourselves in our own bodies and present with our loved ones that the rest of the attachment-based skills and capacities of the heart of being polysecure can be developed and expressed. As an adult who wants to function from a secure place in your relationships, you can affirm, attune, repair, or even play if you are not here with yourself or with your partners. Being present is not just putting your phone down for a few minutes. It is a way of being from interaction to interaction, where you consciously inhabit your own body and show up with the best of your attention, offering your presence as a gift. So first I'll give questions to consider in each of these sections and then things that you can try and experiment with. So questions to consider for being here. How do you show that you are here with your partners? How could you be more present when you are with your partners? Are there ways that you could be more available and responsive to your partners? How do your partners demonstrate that they are being present with you? Do you trust that your partners will be available and responsive if and when you need them? Are there things that your partners could do that would enhance your sense that they are here with you when you are together and here for you in general? Things to try and to experiment with. In order to be truly present with one another, we need to experience and have access to an inner state that is different from our ordinary state of consciousness. To do this, it is important to learn practices that cultivate a state of presence so that you can bring this to the other people you are with. So I recommend exploring different practices to create a state of presence and mindfulness. Next, you can articulate being here and being present as a value that you have for yourself and as an intention in your relationships. Prioritize regular time with your partners when you are both fully here and present with each other. This is especially important when you only get limited time together, but it is just as important when you live together and spend a lot of time in each other's company, but are not actually connecting without the distractions of kids, house, work, pets, meals. Put your phone down. Take your smartwatch off. If you are on a date with a partner, put your electronic devices away. With the exceptions of legitimate situations that need urgent and immediate attention, do your best to take care of any messaging, logistics, or calls with other partners before or after your date with someone. If you have partners who can't handle not being in contact with you for a period of time, professional support might be needed to work through attachment insecurities or patterns of codependency. Even though attachment-based relationships do require regular maintenance, when we are functioning from secure attachment with our partners, we will be flexible, gracious, tolerant, and even appreciative of time apart. There will be times when having your phone away is not realistic. For example, if you nest with your partner and you are both home together, but it's not necessarily designated quality time together. Or if you and a partner are on an extended trip and it's not realistic to not talk to other partners for several days or weeks. In these situations, I find that it is best to just be transparent about when you need to step away and message or make calls. Or even being transparent about when we're intentionally connecting without the phone. So do your best not to sneak in messages with others while the partners you are with are in the bathroom or while you're laying in bed together, unless your partners truly take no offense to this, which some people don't. With nesting partners, it can be helpful to have designated times of the day or during the week where you are both off your phone and focused on each other, so that the times when you are on your phone throughout the day do not become problematic. When you are with non-nesting partners, clearly let them know when you need a certain amount of time to be on your phone and that you'll be fully present when you're back. This can go a long way in preventing tensions and strain. When you are struggling with being present because you're in conflict with another partner or have other life stressors going on, the next best thing you can do is to just name what is tugging at your presence. You do not necessarily have to go fully into what is distracting you, since you might not want to spend your time with one partner processing what's going on with another. And some of the things that you're struggling with may require honoring the privacy of your other partners. But being able to name where you're at and what is preventing you from being fully present, instead of trying to pretend that you're fine when you're really not, is another way of being present with where you are in that moment. It may not be ideal, but it is honest, and partners will typically appreciate this. In your relationships, discuss how available you want to be to each other. For example, to what extent or at what frequency. Be clear about what you can generally offer and follow through regarding time, attention, and forms of communication. As best as you can, clearly communicate when you will be unavailable, whether that is times during the day, specific days of the week, standing dates with certain partners, trips, holidays, etc. When we can't be available to our partners, the next best thing for both of our attachment systems is to tell them first when we will be out of reach and then when we will be back. If you can't be immediately available to one of your partners, the next best thing you can do is let them know when you can so that they can know what to expect. And this can go a really long way. E, expressed delight. The next thing that you can do to nurture more polysecurity with your partners is offer expressed delight. Brown and Elliott describe expressed delight as one of the foundational elements of secure attachment. When a parent shows pleasure, not just in the things that their child does, but in who their child is, a positive sense of self and healthy self-esteem are fostered in the child. As adults, expressed delight is also needed to promote secure attachment and a healthy sense of self within the relationship. When our partners are able to articulate the ways that we are special and valuable to them, our interpersonal self-worth is supported. When we express the ways that we appreciate and are grateful for our partners, we create a culture of positivity in our relationships that allows mutual vulnerability, authenticity, and joy to flourish. We can express the delight we have for our partners through our words, our actions, our touch, as well as just the look in our eyes. Diane Poolheller and her colleagues use the term beam gleam, also known as the attachment gaze, to refer to the nonverbal expression of warmth, kindness, and love that radiates from our eyes, letting our partners know that they are special to us. In non-monogamy, expressed delight is imperative. The paradigm shift from the monogamous mindset of, I am with you because you are the only one for me, to the non-monogamous view that I am with you because you are special and unique, but not the only one, can be difficult to grasp. Even when people don't want to be, the hangover of monogamous thinking often leaves people feeling competitive with their metamours and or doubtful as to why their partners would want to be with them if they don't have the specific qualities, circumstances, sexual interests, or physical attributes that other partners have. Even when people have a healthy sense of self and esteem, they still need positive feedback as to why their partners cherish them and choose to be with them, especially when theoretically they can choose to be with many others. There is nothing wrong with needing to hear why you are wanted and valued by your partners, and it is important for you to be able to communicate to your partners why they specifically matter to you. Experiencing expressed delight and knowing the ways you are precious in your partner's lives can be an important resource to lean on when feeling jealous or threatened by a metamour or potential new partner. Instead of spinning out into doubt and fear, being able to recall the ways your partners experience you as special, even irreplaceable, can soothe the anxious mind and allow for more compersion to arise. So here are some questions to consider for expressed delight. How do you already show expressed delight for your partners? Would your partners like more or different expressed delight from you? How can you provide this? How do your partners let you know that you are unique, special, and precious to them? Are there additional or different ways that you would like to experience expressed delight from your partners? Are there certain situations, like before or after your partner is out on a date with someone else, that expressed delight is more or less supportive to you or your partners? Now here are some things to try and experiment with for expressed delight. Let your partner know in spoken or written word how they enrich your life. Let your partner know in spoken and or written word how unique and special they are to you. Let your partner in spoken or written word know the specific things that you love and appreciate about them. These should be based on who they are versus only the things that they just do for you. If you are less of a verbal type, make a meal, do a dance, create a piece of art, or do something fitting to your style that is effective at intentionally representing and expressing to your partners how unique and precious they are to you. After spending time with a partner, let them know the things you enjoyed about your time together and what specific things they did that were meaningful to you. You can do this either right away when you were saying goodbye, as you were going to bed together, or within a few hours or days after you were together. With your partners, take on a gratitude practice where you set aside a regular time to each appreciate the ways in which you've been supportive or shown up that have been meaningful to each of you. You can share something your partner did that you are grateful for at the end of the day, or you can set aside a few minutes once a week to share your gratitudes from the week. Flash your partner the eyes. You'd be surprised what just 3 seconds of the attachment gaze, that beam gleam, what it can do to fortify your attachment bond. When in new relationships with someone, we rarely have to remind ourselves of this because everything in our body is just easily oozing that this person is the 8th wonder of the world to us. But bringing this back in our long-term relationships can support feeling that spark again. Seeing our partners giving the attachment gaze to other people might be painful when we are no longer in new relationship energy with that partner. Try intentionally to send the beam gleam to your partners, and you will be pleasantly surprised at what it can do to feed each other's attachment systems and strengthen your connection. A for attunement. Our attachment bonds are emotional bonds, and being able to emotionally tune into and connect with our partners is at the core of feeling safe and secure together. Attunement is a state of resonance with our partners, and the act of turning towards them in an attempt to understand the fullness of their perspective and experience. Attuning to a partner does not mean that you have to agree with them and take on their experience as your own. But it does mean that you are willing to join them in their internal emotional world and their inner state of mind in order to empathize with what they are going through. Attunement is meeting your partner with curiosity, wanting to understand their feelings and needs. It is the feeling of being seen, understood, and gotten by others. As children, it is through being attuned to by our attachment figures, by having them mirror and match our experiences and help us make sense of our inner experiences, that we are able to then develop the ability to identify our own thoughts and emotions and subsequently self-regulate these emotional and mental states. As adults, we still need to be met and understood in order to best regulate ourselves. It is through being connected with others and through feeling held, understood, and supported by others that we are able to tolerate and regulate our own emotional responses. There are certain challenges with attunement that can surface in attachment-based relationships. They include how to stay attuned to your partner when they are upset with you, and how to stay attuned if you get triggered by them. In non-monogamous relationships, it can be additionally challenging to stay attuned to your partner when they are talking about one of their other partners, when jealousy arises, or when the things they are sharing about others have implications for your relationship with them. When you are with multiple partners at the same time, you might also feel confused around how to stay attuned to each of your partners when you're all together. Just as the wants and needs of each relationship are different, the ways we attune to each of our partners can also be different. So here are some questions to consider for the A of attunement. How do you experience your partners as attuning to you? How do you know that your partners get you and care about your experience? In what ways do you already attune to your partners? How could you better or differently attune to your partners to support them in feeling even more seen and understood? Are there ways that you would like your partners to better or differently attune to you that would support you in feeling even more seen and understood? Now here's some things to try and experiment for the A of attunement. Listen with your heart. When listening to your partner, put your solution-oriented brain aside for just a few minutes. Soften your eyes. Bring warmth to your face. Open your heart and listen. Ask questions from genuine curiosity and the desire to truly understand, rather than from preconceived notions about what your partner has already done or what you think they should do. Be careful about asking questions that are really just searching for evidence to make yourself feel better, to prove them wrong, or to expose them as lying in some way. Also, be careful not to interrogate or manipulate through your questions. Make an effort to track something that your partner is going through. For example, if you know they went to an event or they have an aunt in the hospital, follow up by asking them how the event was or how their aunt is doing. Genuinely ask your partner about how they are doing, whether in general or about something specific. Use open-ended questions that encourage them to share any feelings or needs they have surrounding the situation, what their experience has been, what it means to them, and how they have been impacted by it. Bring your bodies into attunement. Sex can be a great way to do this together, but also if you take turns just focusing on what one partner likes and wants. You can also explore techniques and exercises such as sitting or spooning and just breathing together, bringing your bodies and breath into rhythm and harmony in non-sexual ways. Take a pause in your day, Think about something that you know one of your partners is grappling with and put yourself in their shoes for a few minutes. When listening to your partner talk about another partner or something else that has a potential trigger for you, put your friend hat on instead of your partner hat. Any concerns or questions that you may have can still be brought up eventually, but do your best to initially separate what they are sharing and what it means to them from how it impacts you. Slow down your conversations by taking turns paraphrasing what you just heard the other partner say before you respond to what they said or try to make your own point. Learn nonviolent communication or other empathy-based techniques that encourage you to empathically reflect back to your partner what they are feeling and needing. Check out John Gottman's book, The Science of Trust: Emotional Attunement for Couples. R, rituals and routines. Our attachment system is comforted by routine and regularity. In our relationships with our attachment figures, we tend to prefer partners who are more reliable and situations where we can experience the ease of generally knowing what to expect and not be surprised to the point of disruption. The mundane rituals of everyday life can put many of our worries to rest and remind us that we are an integral part of our partner's lives. And then the profound rituals of commitment ceremonies or rites of passage can significantly deepen and strengthen our bonds. The outer commitment we make to a relationship through ceremonies or officially asking someone to be our partner can offer structure and definition. And the day-to-day ways that we engage with one another, the micro-routines and rituals of the relationship that we create, can be seen as the inner commitment we make to show up for the relationship wholeheartedly, and not just because there might be an outer, more explicit commitment to rely on. In monogamy, the daily routines of a relationship can be easier to fall into. There are only two people to consider, and the larger rituals and relationship rites of passage, such as marriage, having children, or moving in together, are more obvious, culturally expected, and culturally supported. In non-monogamy, socially recognized ways of honoring the relationship can be less clear, and it can be more difficult to find our rhythm with a partner, especially when we don't live with our partner, or when one of you already lives with other partners. Non-monogamous relationships do have their own relationship rite of passage too, like first sleepovers, trips away together, or having sex without a barrier for the first time. But the significance of these events can be easily missed by normative standards. However, it is just as important in our non-monogamous relationships to find the special things, big and small, that we do with our partners. The routines that we can rely on and look forward to are an important part of secure functioning in our CNM attachment-based relationships. It is also important to create rituals and routines that honor the transitional moments when you and a partner are parting or reuniting. Our attachment systems are very sensitive to comings and goings. Abrupt departures and sudden arrivals can all be jarring to the nervous system, and hellos or goodbyes left unacknowledged can be disconnective. Understanding what we need to reconnect after being apart from our partner and what we might need to feel secure when saying goodbye might seem like subtle things to focus on, but they should not be underestimated in their impact. One polyamorous colleague of mine intentionally knows the love languages of each of his different partners, and when they reunite after being apart, he does his best to immediately give them their primary love language as a way to reinforce their connection and set the stage for the rest of their time together. Additionally, how partners say goodbye before one of them goes on a date with someone else, or how they reunite after having been with other partners, can make a big difference in feeling safe and sound with each other. Some people don't want much pomp and circumstance when saying goodbye, While others need moments of connection with each other before their partner goes off on a date with someone else. If partners live together, they may request that a partner who has been with someone else shower before coming back to bed. They may desire emotional or physical contact after being apart, or they may prefer to sleep in separate rooms on date nights with others. There's no right or wrong way, it's just, what do you need? While having routines is definitely important in our attachment-based relationships, having times where we also break out of our routines can be just as significant. We can easily fall into default patterns and ruts in our relationships. Remembering the importance of stepping out of our day-to-day cycles, focusing on some novelty, play, and adventure can revivify and strengthen our connections with partners. Here are some questions to consider for rituals and routines. What routines do my partners and I already have that are meaningful to me and support me in feeling safe and secure together? What rituals have we participated in, or what relationship rites of passage have we gone through that have brought us closer? How do I like to be celebrated or to celebrate others? Are there any daily or regular routines that would support me in feeling more secure with my partner? Are there any relationship rites of passage or rituals that could further deepen our bond? What do you and your partners each need to reconnect with each other after being apart? Are there ways of checking in or saying goodbye before going on a date with another person that would create more safety and security? And then how do you want to connect or be approached afterwards? Here are some things to try and experiment with for rituals and routines. Create bedtime or waking rituals with your partners, whether or not you live together. Make sure to also support and allow space for your nesting partners to create their own bedtime and waking rituals with other partners. Celebrate birthdays, anniversaries, and accomplishments with your partners. When it comes to birthdays, communicate ahead of time about what your hopes and desires are for your birthday. And be careful about expecting your partner to be with you on their birthday, just because that's what you would prefer. Give your partners the autonomy to spend their birthday however and with whomever they would like. It's not your day to claim. Grieve losses and transitions together. Create holiday rituals that honor the relationship, whether or not they are on the actual day of the holiday. Create standing dates and dedicate time to regular activities together. Be transparent with partners about any standing dates you already have with other partners or any standing dates that you are looking to create. Also, be transparent with your partners about specific activities or terms of endearment that are designated for just certain relationships. Now, some polyamorous people believe that you should never have certain things or places that only belong to one relationship, while other people have few qualms about this. I take the middle path on this issue because I don't know if it's completely realistic to abolish all expressions of what's ours from a relationship, because some forms of couple identity can be very healthy in polyamory. And I've also seen the powerful healing effect that can happen when people are allowed to ask for something they want to stay within a certain relationship. As long as it's transparent and understood to everyone involved what things belong to a certain relationship and why, it can work well. It is additionally important that all relationships have the freedom to be able to organically create their own version of the things or activities that are theirs. It's key that requests are reasonable. Like, we like to listen to this specific podcast together, or please only call me Sugar Puff, rather than limits such as you can only go to Mexico with me, or you can only do this sexual position with me. Allocating certain things to relationships can be workable, but definitely tread carefully and transparently, because these waters can become dangerous and hierarchical very quickly. Create pet names and special terms of endearment for each other. It's okay to ask that some names or terms of endearment are only shared with each other, but again, be reasonable and very conscious and inclusive of as many partners as possible when setting up such agreements. Have a commitment ceremony with your partner. Currently in the United States, people can only get legally married to one person at a time, but there is nothing that stops you from having commitment ceremonies with multiple partners. You can create your own ceremony that you conduct together. You can have friends, family members, mentors, or other partners officiate a ceremony for you. Or you can find an officiant friendly to non-monogamy to help you co-create and perform a ceremony that is meaningful to you and your partners. Step out of your routines and rituals. Set aside a day that is unscheduled to spend time together, whether at home or doing something out in the world that you normally don't do together. T. Turning towards after conflict. In any relationship, ruptures are inevitable. Relationships are not static, but an ongoing flow of harmony to disharmony, rupture and repair, connection, disconnection, and back into connection again. We are all different from each other, so we are all eventually going to slip up, make mistakes, say things we wish we could take back, or forget things that are important to our partners. Even if we wanted to be, we can't be perfectly present and attentive to our partners all the time, every time. What matters is not that we have ruptures, but how we repair them. When there is conflict and disagreement, or when attunement and connection has been lost, it is how we repair and find our way back to our partners that build secure attachment and relational resilience. Conflicts left unrepaired can leave lasting effects on our sense of trust, safety, and security. In terms of attachment styles, people functioning from a secure style are more likely to use constructive and mutually beneficial problem-solving strategies than people who are more anxiously attached. They are also more likely to accommodate their partners than people who are avoidantly attached, demonstrating their joint concern for their own interests and their partner's interests, as well as for enhancing the relationship. The Gottman Institute has conducted decades of research on couples and found that the main difference between happy couples and unhappy couples is not that happy couples don't have arguments or make mistakes, but they're just better and faster at doing the repair work when breaches have occurred. Couples that are described as the masters of relationships versus what the Gottman Institute names the disasters of relationships still experience episodes of yelling, being mean to each other, defensiveness, being critical, or shutting down. But these couples are also willing to admit responsibility for their part in the conflict so that they can begin the process of healing their bond. The masters of relationships are able to learn from what went wrong and see that repairing the relationship is more important than the problem itself. The Gottman Institute also found that how skillful someone's repair attempt was did not necessarily predict how effective their repair was. So repairs did not have to be perfectly executed as much as they had to be genuine. I often tell couples and multiple partner relationships that you can have all the communication techniques and conflict resolution skills in the world, but they do nothing if you still have an attitude of wanting to either be right or prove your partner wrong. I still recommend acquiring more communication and conflict resolution skills, but even without these, the right attitude, one of repair, responsibility, humility, and openness, goes far. The Gottman Institute also found that resilience after conflict was related to how much a couple was making regular deposits into their emotional bank account. Repair attempts are much more successful when there is a pre-existing relationship culture of understanding each other, expressing gratitude, and regularly doing nice things for each other, which supports the relationship in being better able to withstand the inevitable storms. Relationships that are regularly distant or disrespectful have much less success with their repair attempts, no matter how beautiful the attempt is. So if you are already doing the HEAR of the hearts of secure functioning, you will find that conflict may still arise, but the repair work goes much more smoothly and even brings you closer together in the end. So here are some questions to consider for turning towards after conflict. Are there certain themes to the conflicts that you have with your partners? When there has been a rupture, do you and your partners already repair well? How do you do this? How are you at offering a repair? What comes easily to you and what feels difficult? How are you with receiving a repair from your partners? When there has been a rupture, what things could you do differently to better repair with your partner? What requests do you have for your partners around this? Now here are some things to try and potentially experiment with for turning towards after conflict. If a conflict begins over text and it's not going well, pause until you can either get face-to-face with each other or voice-to-voice, which will help in preventing further misunderstandings and spiraling out. Don't be afraid to take a timeout if things get too heated. Many people know that taking a breather when conflict is high would probably be a good idea, but they keep trying to talk or process anyway, even though it's getting them nowhere or already getting nasty. When disagreements and conflicts escalate to the point where you feel stuck, you are triggered, or when there is name-calling, criticism, or blaming, take a pause. Just make sure not to walk away without saying anything to your partners. Instead, let them know you need to cool off, and together decide when you'll come back to address the issue at hand. What I'm describing here is the difference between a reactionary or habitual fleeing and withdrawing, which can be counterproductive, versus consciously taking a breather, and that can be very productive when conflicts get too hot. Keep your desire to be right in check. Remember your desire to be in relationship. And as best as you can, try to stay rooted in being respectful to yourself and respectful to your partners, not just one or the other. Check out The 5 Languages of Apology by Gary Chapman. If you experience regular conflict with a partner, or maybe it's less frequent conflict but very destabilizing when it arises, when not in conflict, have a conversation about what each of you needs, where you see sticky points that can be avoided or mitigated, and what each of you needs for repair. Seek the support of a third party if conflicts are recurrent or seem unsolvable. Finally, check out the RADAR relationship check-in method as developed by the Multiamory podcast to support regular check-ins and conflict management. In this chapter, we explored how to cultivate polysecurity in your multiple attachment-based relationships. Implementing the suggestions in this chapter could take months or even years to apply. Because of this, I suggest that you start where you are. In an ideal setup, you would take a certain amount of time to focus on each letter in the heart. For example, 2 weeks on being here with your partner, and then 2 weeks on express delight, and so on, so that you can really dive in and get the lived experience of what each of these components feels and looks like. You may find that you already do some of these letters really well, but other letters not so much. You can skip around based on the needs of your particular relationship, but I would not recommend skipping over a letter entirely. Each one relates and builds upon the next in ways that are important for you and your partners to be polysecure. Some of you may also need to begin with the next chapter on creating secure attachment with yourself before you are ready to apply the heart of polysecurity in a relationship.